Thank you so much to everybody who showed up on Saturday. It was really nice to redo the Rage, Your Health, and Yourself workshop. I forgot to hit record the first time I did it, so I had to redo it, which meant more people were able to show up the second time around, and that was really cool. So thank you again, everyone, and if you watched the replay, or if I have emailed you the replay and you haven't watched it yet, this is your reminder to do that. I know it gets really easy to just, you know, forget about things that we've signed up for, especially when they're not live. So I'll be interested to see if you watch the replay and what you think about it. There's a link for a survey in the email that I sent you. And if you would like the replay, just send me an email and I'm happy to send you the info on that. The next workshop is going to be Saturday, April 6th at 10 a.m. Eastern, and it's all about maintaining friendships while living with a chronic illness. The overwhelming majority of us struggle with this. Things like when to reach out, how to reach out, making plans because we might cancel or feeling like a burden, but also feeling resentful at the same time. It's tricky and it's complicated. So my hope is that you will gain a lot from this next workshop. Again, that's Saturday, April 6th at 10 a.m. And you can sign up at the link in the show notes. Additionally, if you are a resident of Georgia or Florida, then I have a therapy group that is starting on April 1st, 2024. The workshop that I just mentioned a moment ago, that's for anyone. It's not therapy. But this is a therapy group and is open to residents of the states that I'm licensed in. So this group will be 12 sessions long weekly. They're 90 minutes and they are virtual. They're via video. And I'll be every Tuesday from 3 to 4:30 p.m. starting April 1st. It comes with a digital workbook and the group format is a little bit of education where I'll be starting each session with an educational component around things like grief and identity work, working through anger, guilt and self-blame, fear of your body. That's a big one that we'll probably talk about a lot. And symptoms like brain fog, physical pain, chronic fatigue, dizziness, all of that. We'll be learning some pain management techniques and skills and practicing those in a way that is genuine and hopefully will stick, because we can learn a lot of these things and then feel like we know it and then never do it or just feel like it doesn't work for us. And really, it might be that we didn't have that helping hand, that warmth throughout the learning process. I think that's what happens a lot of the time is we're trying to learn something in our brain. We don't have any support around it. And then we feel like we know it, but it didn't work for us because we didn't really have all of the follow through. And again, that follow through usually only happens when you have really warm, genuine support. So that's what I'm hoping to provide with this group. If you have out-of-network benefits with your insurance, then super bills will be provided. If not, then it's just a private paid group. And I want to offer a couple of bonuses as well. I'm calling them bonuses because if you live in Florida, this might not be feasible, but we're going to do an in-person meetup at the end of each month. And so that'll be 3 meetups in total, but that will be in Atlanta. If you're in Florida and you want to travel up this way, that would be amazing. But just to know that's not a requirement of the group, and it's really just an extra thing that I want to do because I think virtual work is amazing. And sometimes that in-person aspect can really just tie everything together. That will be a bonus. And then another bonus session, and again, I'm calling this a bonus because it's not mandatory and it really depends on if you have someone you would want to bring with you or if they would even agree to attending. But at the end of the program, or maybe 2/3 of the way through, I haven't decided yet, there will be a session, a group session, where your family members can attend the group to learn about how they can better support you in your journey. So that's the group therapy program. And again, I will have a link in the description box below with more information for that. But if you're interested in either of those things, click those links or you can email me at destiny@destinywinters.com. The Chronic Illness Therapist podcast is meant to be a place where people with chronic illnesses can come to feel heard, seen, and safe while listening to mental health therapists and other medical professionals talk about the realities of treating difficult conditions. This might be a new concept for you, one in which you never have to worry about someone inferring that it's all in your head. We dive deep into the human side of treating complex medical conditions and help you find professionals that leave you feeling hopeful for the future. I hope you love what you learn here, and please consider leaving a review or sharing this podcast with someone you love. This podcast is meant for educational purposes only. For specific questions related to your unique circumstances, please contact a licensed medical professional in your state of residence. Shade Ferrier is a licensed marriage and family therapist in Georgia, specializing in couples counseling and sex therapy. She also offers dating coaching, interactive relationship workshops, and hosts the My Intimacy Therapist podcast. Fun fact, you'll hear us talk at the very end of the podcast about her date nights that she hosts for couples. And my husband and I went to one back in December of 2023, and it was so much fun. Having a date night planned for you that you or your partner didn't have to think about at all. You just show up and everything is taken care of. It was such a great experience. You have to experience it for yourself. So if you were anywhere in the Southeast, if you were just looking for a getaway and you want to come to Atlanta during one of Sade's weekends where she's doing a date night, highly, highly recommend getting an Airbnb here and taking her up on that offer. Why don't we start with you telling everyone kind of who you are and where you practice, what you do, and yeah, we'll get into it from there.
Sure. So I'm Shade Ferrier. I work with couples and individuals that are experiencing pain and intimacy during sexual intercourse. I work in the Atlanta, Georgia area, which it would be super awesome if there was the ability to work all across the United States, but for people who don't know, just in order to keep everyone safe, our country has a lot of limits with borders with therapy, and so it's the state that the therapist is licensed in. And the reason I mention that is I often have people reaching out from other states who want to work with me, and with that, it's definitely come visit in Georgia, or let's find another option. I can connect you with one of my colleagues, or we can see if a coaching option fits your story. But all that to say, I'm based in Atlanta and I love it here.
Awesome. Yeah, it's great that we have telehealth, but our laws haven't quite caught up yet.
So I hope it does soon. I imagine it would.
I mean, you're at LMFT, right? Licensed Marriage and Family Therapist. Are you a part of the Counseling Compact?
I don't think that the MFTs have joined the compact yet. I think that LPCs are ahead in that. Which again, for people not listening, there are people lobbying to make sure that we can see you regardless of what your state is. And there's a couple states that are part of that. And we'll get there. We'll get there eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. LMFTs definitely should be in on that. That's really a bummer to hear that. We'll keep fighting for it. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of gatekeeping. You work in Atlanta. You're in person and virtual, or just one?
Both. I do with sex therapy prefer to work in person with folks, just because being in person allows for a change of environment, especially if a lot of your pain stories happened in the bedroom or whatever. For you to get on a session there can sometimes be a little bit of a mental block, but I think a lot of my clients will do hybrid, where we'll see each other in person, and then when traffic or babysitting decides, we'll do an online session.
Yeah, I know that's a really good point, like getting out of the environment, especially when you're it's interesting. Sometimes I find having a client in the environment can evoke certain emotions or certain thoughts that then is more tangible for them.
For sure.
They like came to the office, wouldn't be able to touch, but then sometimes it's the complete opposite.
For sure. There's no pro or, well, not no pros and cons. There are pros and cons to both, which is why, have you like heard BetterHelp and their like ads at all?
BetterHelp. BetterHelp. Yeah.
Some of their ads really lean into like trying to make a very black and white of only do online because all in person is horrible, which hurts my heart because we have cozy blankets and candles. A lot of good things. Anyway,
people should. Yeah, no. Well, their BetterHelp is a huge tech company, not really a therapy company. So their expertise is in marketing. I
could go on a whole soapbox about that, but they like to sue whoever talks about them poorly. So we'll just end it.
Wow. Very interesting. Yeah. And that's done. Okay.
But yes, I agree. There's like no pro. I don't think. Yeah, there's no pros or cons. Although, I mean, sometimes the pro and con is basically the individual, you know, where they feel comfortable. So, and sometimes even I've noticed like, and I can't put a finger on it, but I'll be like, I really need to see this person like in person. Or sometimes I've had clients in person where I'm like, we have way better sessions virtually. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting.
I got some folks I've never seen in person and we've been working together for like a year or two. So it's definitely case by case.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, did I say in person? Online, I meant.
Oh, online. Yeah. Yes. But yeah, so you work, do you work mostly with couples or do you do a lot of individual?
So that goes into what it looks like to have sex therapy. So for a lot of people, the women tends to be the person that is seeking out the help in a lot of my cases. Not all sex therapy is that way because we know there's lots of male sexual dysfunctions too. But sometimes she's coming in and she's like, look, my partner is great. He wants to help. But right now I just have some individual stuff I want to work on. So we do individual sex therapy. But then sometimes either the partner will join us later on or they'll both come in together because A, he just really wants to learn and get all the tools. And B, it could be that he actually definitely needs all the tools because there's some damage being done in the way they communicate about sex. And I would also like to say I'm using he and she just as the general pronouns for the way couples typically present when they come in for sex therapy.
It sounds like most of your clients probably are, you know, heterosexual and cis. And so that's kind of what you're working with on the day to day.
Yeah. And, you know, the penetrative piece has a lot to do with that and the pain. So that's typically how that presents.
Makes perfect sense. Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about, well, first, maybe even we just dispel some myths about sex therapy. What are some things that people might think that are inaccurate before starting sex therapy? You know, what are some that's important for people to know as we go into this conversation?
I think the myths really start with the fact that people don't even know it exists. So it's hard to have positive or negative thoughts when you don't know this is even an option. And then you have now with TV, television, and you'll see some portrayals of sex therapy that are inaccurate and or unethical and a lot of different things. Like, do you know the show New Girl?
Yeah. Why am I not remember? I love that show.
It's got Zooey Deschanel. Yeah. But basically, no spoilers. The show's been out forever. There's an episode where her dad's new wife is a sex therapist, according to them.
I don't think I've seen this one.
Okay. So she's a sex therapist and she gets this text message from a client that's like, I'm coming. And oh, I just can't stop touching myself. I'm like, okay, that would not play out.
Absolutely not.
That's not how this would happen in any way, shape or form. So, you know, a lot of the myths have to do with like just exactly what does it look like? What are the boundaries? Some people still think that sex therapists will practice with them. And so let me just clear that up. We do not touch in sex therapy. There's no touching. It's talk therapy, but highly focused on sexual intimacy in all of its parts, and the physical, the emotional, the spiritual, the sensual, everything having to do with who you are as a sexual being. We're talking through that in a way that you largely probably haven't talked through with anyone in your life. We're learning how to use language around things that feel vulnerable, sensitive, exposing. Sometimes there's trauma. And a really big part of it too is homework, which I do need to think of a sexier word for that. But basically, the amount of progress you're going to see is very largely correlated with what you're doing outside of session. So unlike traditional therapy that's, you know, non-sex therapy where you can come, you vent, you talk, and that can feel good and create change, sex therapy really does have that added part of here's some activities for you to do with your partner in order to make sure there's connectivity between what we're talking about and how it actually plays out in the bedroom. Without that piece, there's not a lot to unpack to help us see, oh, okay, that's where you guys get tripped up a lot, or interesting, this happened and this was your response, or this is what that made you feel. Let's talk about that. We really need both parts, talk therapy and at-home work.
Yeah, you need that, excuse me, that experiential piece. Yeah, so like you said, you can troubleshoot. And then I'm assuming the experiential piece can be both like just communication stuff as well as actually engaging in sexual activities, you know, with their partner.
It's all of the above. And I try not to give the whole mountain at the beginning of sex therapy work. So if you're listening to this, just know that you would never have to think of all of this at once. This is just the behind the scenes. But depending on what sexual dysfunction you're bringing in, like vaginismus, there are, first of all, no one also knows what vaginismus is. And I've had several ladies go to their OBGYN, which you think would be the place to ask questions about this. And even the OBs don't know. So these different pain disorders are very niche and specialized, meaning you kind of want someone who this is what they do. Don't just assume that because they're in a certain field that they know how to work with it. Just like not all therapists work with couples and vice versa. So with vaginismus, talk therapy, sex therapy is a big part of it, but there's likely also going to be some medical component depending on what type of vaginismus you have. That's another thing that people don't know. Vaginismus isn't just one thing. It's actually just kind of the catch-all term that is used. And I've got a quiz that I have on my website to help you differentiate where it could be coming from. But you could have vaginismus due to a semen allergy, a latex allergy, the IC. I never know how to pronounce that correctly. Interstitial cystitis. Yes. It could be hypertonic pelvic floor. Oftentimes, it is hypertonic pelvic floor, meaning your pelvic floor is very, very, very tight. People describe that as a wall. It depends whether that was, you know, kind of which came first, the chicken or the egg, whether that condition developed due to something else. All that to say, depending on your condition, you're either going to need to have a surgical kind of situation or pelvic floor therapy, or we just change even the types of feminine hygiene products you use. So there's a really all hands on deck approach to treatment.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. You need someone who's really knowledgeable, spends a lot of their time learning about just this thing, because there's so much to know. Not everyone can possibly know everything, which is why we have specialists.
Yeah.
But then you also, you know, you want to bring that back into like the general wholeness of your body and your mind, and remember that it's just one part of you, not all of you.
Yeah. And I think I'm a little bit biased in the sense that I would say start with a sex therapist. And again, vaginismus is a specialty even within sex therapy. So start with a sex therapist who works with vaginismus. That can be a really great foundation for you to figure out, okay, now what do I do next? So you're not just home on Google, trying to figure out all of it and reading people's horror stories. We're reading people's advice that has nothing to do with your specific body and your specific situation. Yeah, because sometimes in work with couples, we'll have it where let's do some sessions and then get you prepared to go to pelvic floor therapy. Maybe I don't see them for a couple of months while they just focus their energy and financial resources on that. And then we come back and work on penetrative work with your partner.
Yeah. What are some of the things that tend to come up after that work has been done? Like, do you notice there might be still fear to work through, even though actually the pain has reduced, or maybe something else? Like, what do you find people kind of when they come back? Or if they're working with a pelvic floor PT, then what becomes the main tenets of your work together?
My special focus while they're working with their PT or other medical provider is to collaborate with that person in some way. For the anxiety part that happens. So we're already doing a lot of the cognitive or the mental focus type of work, how you think about your body, how you think about the act of having something penetrating or being inserted, that can create a lot of fear. By the time we work through that, where they're saying dilators typically come in sets of eight, or at least the favorite dilators that I like to recommend, intimate rows. So when a client's coming back and they're saying, yeah, I'm on dilator 4, 5, 6, yes, it's uncomfortable sometimes and painful, but for the most part, I can jump in at dilator 5, work my way up to 7. That's the place where now we start to figure out that when you're holding a dilator, you have control. And so it feels a little less anxiety producing. But then when we bring back in your actual partner, who has so much more behind them than just being a penetrative object, you have this person who goes, okay, now that you're fixed, can we have sex now? Or I feel like you don't want me, you don't love me because you never have sex, or all of those parts of the relationship start to come back. So that's typically what we're working on, is how do we talk about desire? How do we not see penetration as the only expression of sex? Well, to be fair, we start that out from day one when they come in. You say, how often do we have sex? We have sex, and I'm like, oh, well, let's pause there. Here's a different definition for sex. Now let's make sure even our words reflect the difference. So this work is a lot of different parts coming together at once. I hope I'm not explaining it in a way that sounds overwhelming.
I don't think so. I'm familiar with a lot of what you're saying. So maybe, you're right. Hopefully it's not overwhelming to anyone, but I think it sounds clear. And it is hard to explain this work because there's so many layers to it, and it's not step one, step two, step three. It depends on what's going on in their relationship with their body personally. There's a lot of layers. So, which is why we do what we do. We're trained to look at those layers and not make decisions for our clients. We help guide them by illuminating, like, here's what I'm noticing. Here's what I know, logistically, but then here's what's happening emotionally. So it's a collaborative process with our client to then say, where do you want to go from here, while we're guiding them in that?
Yeah, I think my approach is very structured. I like how you said illuminating, to show here are some options that we know can fit based on what you're saying is important to you. Which one do you most want to pursue right now? So some ladies are like, they make me so tired and exhausted and I don't even want to do it. Totally fine. Let's find another way. I have some couples who, most of my couples have some sort of faith or religious background. And so some parts of sex therapy protocol don't fit for their values. For example, anything related to ejaculation outside of the vagina or self-stimulation, they're just like, I have no interest in that. Absolutely. Then let's figure out what works specifically for you two as a couple, what will make you feel honored, saved, loved, cherished, all of that. And that's the part that I really try to encourage therapy with a therapist other than self-study, because if you're just on the world wide web, you're going to get a very wide net of you should do this, you should do that, with no customization of who you are. I think that's important.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. That's what we're here for. And there's a lot of great information online, but again, only if it applies to you. And it's hard to know, does it apply to me or does it not? So yeah, that's where these sessions really make the most impact.
Yeah. And people always ask too, how long will it take before I'm better or this works? And I give a very frustrating response of, it depends.
But it is concrete though, because it depends on specific things. Like, do you do work outside of session?
Whenever I have a consultation with a new client, I always ask, okay, what season of life are you in right now? Are you about to go into your working, 16 hours a day, you rarely see each other? Is it the holidays where you'll be doing lots of vacations and family stuff? If so, let's not start this, because you're going to get frustrated with yourself for coming to therapy and saying we didn't do our homework. Where in actuality, it's fine. It's just life right now. Let's just plan strategically. So
yeah,
we try to work with all the moving parts.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Now, I think the interesting thing, I have a question for you. It gets interesting when you have someone with vaginismus and another chronic illness. So I'd be curious to know what your thoughts are on how you adapt to something like that, that combination.
I would imagine it probably is going to be very similar to just with vaginismus. I think part of what you're talking to is this is meeting the client where they're at, which means, yeah, if you think a dilator is going to be really helpful, but they're like absolutely not, either, again, like it feels like against my values, or it just doesn't fit with my, like the time commitment it takes, or then we say, okay, let's put that to the side. One thing I work on with clients a lot is meeting themselves where they're at and not overdoing it. Which means like, okay, if your therapist does give you homework, we're not looking that you've completed the homework accurately and to 100%. We're actually, like you said, you had said earlier, we want to see where we can, essentially where we can troubleshoot. And so just by you initiating to attempt this homework, and then you come back and say, I couldn't do it because, that actually tells us what step we need to take next.
Yeah.
Rather
than we're looking for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would think 98% of my people are like super duper type A, goal oriented, do all the things. Like I can't think of the amount of times someone has come in with this issue and said, what's vaginismus? No, they've done homework. They've done research. They chose me because they already know all that stuff. And so they're like in their head with all the knowledge and tools. So this work ends up being, even in the homework, getting back into your body, into your senses, into your experiences, not just your thinking process. So for anyone that is listening to this podcast super diligently, that would be the place that, just know that that's what therapy is going to do, and it's going to frustrate you, because maybe the homework is go take a nap,
which can be really hard for a lot of people.
Yeah. And then the pushback of, but I can't because da 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 da. It's hard to think of pleasure, rest, and all of those things as not being luxury items, but something you just get to have if you'd like.
It is really hard. It's an interesting, it can even sound like privilege, like to be like, oh, to go take a rest or to enjoy yourself when there's so much that needs to be done. But I just think about how in other countries, even much less, quote, privileged countries than ours, rest and play are essential, like essential to their daily rhythms.
Yeah, this is an unformed thought, so who knows what I'll think about it once I say it out loud. But I think we measure privilege economically in this country primarily, and that's certainly a form of privilege, right? Getting to see a sex therapist is a form of privilege. Insurance currently is enforcing that it remains just a privilege thing because they are not as cooperative with us on covering that. But I do think there's another type of way to see privilege in just time, energy, things like that. Our system right now isn't the best set up to let people just be people outside of work hours. I think that some other countries are a little bit better, not even just countries, but cultures are better at having a community aspect. And because you're so plugged into community, you're not trying to do all of the things just you. You have so many resources in friends, connections, emotional intimacy. So I wouldn't want to just narrow privilege down to the money aspect or I have to go work. I'm not saying that you were, but I think when people
that's great. Yeah. No, that's a really important part of the conversation. And that I think is the part that I was opening up to, is just privilege does come in so many different ways. The way we think about it. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to think about it.
And maybe another word related to privilege would be access or space, whatever that looks like. I encourage people to find the version of that in their lives that are as they are. So it's not saying that I can only have these good things once XYZ changes, once the kids turn whatever age, none of that. Let's actually look at your life as it is and see where you do have some of that goodness. And that ends up happening a lot with the B word when people say they were too busy to do homework. It's like, maybe you have a lot of stuff, but you're also here in therapy. So it's not 100% true that you have no margin. So let's just embrace the fact that life might be a little cuckoo right now, but where are your pockets of goodness?
Yeah, we often have to, and this is true with, you know, all chronic illnesses, not having a chronic illness, like we have to choose where we spend our time. And that choice sometimes comes purely from survival. So it doesn't even feel like a choice because it's like, okay, well, I have to put money, like, to go back to money. It's like, I have to put food on the table. And so I have to, and I'm working a job that only pays X amount of dollars. So therefore I have to work this many hours. Like that is absolutely true. Mm-hmm. And then when we add the choice into that, like, okay, well, I am choosing to put food on the table for my family. And this is how I have to do it. That in and of itself can bring some empowerment into your life. When you realize that there is a choice, even if your circumstances are the reason why you're making that choice.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. I mean, the way we think about things has such heavy implications for how we experience it. So even eating your meal very slowly and relishing it, taking the extra 5 minutes to eat slowly rather than be in a rush, changes just the pace of how you're experiencing your day. You're in a rush all the time.
Choosing to drive the speed limit instead of zooming around people in traffic. Like, can you afford the extra 5 minutes to just like chill and listen to a song on the radio?
Yeah, that I was at a conference yesterday and listening to some pelvic floor PTs talk, and the concept of power peeing came up. So, like,
peeing.
So, yes, you sit down and like you just like rush it all out. Like you push your pee out really quickly and it's really not great for your pelvic floor. And so we want to learn how to like basically like, and you can use your breath or just mindfully like open up and let it come out rather than like using all of your muscles to just push it out as fast as possible. Some of the examples that came up were like school teachers who literally have to hold their pee longer than they should have to, or even hairdressers in the middle of like they'll go 4 hours without peeing as well. And so then you go to the bathroom and you have to go so badly, you pee really, really quickly. And if you pay attention to your muscles down there, you'll realize like they are forcefully pushing out this pee. And it's, again, just not, I mean, a pelvic floor therapist could explain why, but it's not great for your pelvic floor. But my mental health side of things was like, yeah, and it's just continuing to rush throughout your day when like, going to the bathroom, whether you power pee or you don't, it will change the time you're in the bathroom probably by 30 to 60 seconds. And nobody can tell me, other than maybe like someone who's working with life or death, that is like your client in the hairdressing seat can absolutely wait an extra minute or two. Even your kids in the classroom, I mean, that's a loaded, teachers have, we, that's a loaded, yes, there's so much happening to teachers right now, and what they don't have access to that they should to bring up the next generation of our country. But it's a little bit about habits and what you're used to doing that we do without thinking. And it's also just, well, I guess this is essentially saying the same thing, but your nervous system, it's like an object in motion stays in motion. And so if we don't bring some awareness to what we're doing and we're speeding all day, whether it's in the car or when you're going pee, you're just keeping your body in fight or flight all day long. And so it's really hard to bring awareness, because if you slow down in the bathroom and then you come back out into a fast-paced environment, it can feel a little bit like whiplash. So that's a lot of the work that I do with clients too, is helping them navigate transitions, not like just life transitions, but literally going from the bathroom to your work environment. How do we slow that whole transition down and speed up appropriately, pace ourselves, and then also slow down appropriately so it doesn't literally quite feel like whiplash. And I would imagine that plays into the sexual part of this conversation too.
Transitions are beyond a necessity for being able to be in your desire. You have to transition. Whether it be on television or stories you hear from friends, which there's just such, I have such a soapbox on just sexuality and the messages we get about it. But I think a lot of people assume that sexuality for most people looks like, well, they're able to just make it happen. Or maybe as a woman, have a partner who has more of that spontaneous desire. Can you feel like you should have to be there too? Wherever the belief is coming from, we tend to rush what it looks like to connect into sexual mode or sexual being. I think the way we communicate about it can be part of that. Like, hey, you want to have sex right now? Right now, no. And so then there's this big gap because you either feel like you have to be on or off. It's one or the other. So incorporating some version of transition helps you to just even get to the place where you're back inside your body. Just point blank. Don't even worry about being turned on, not worried about being horny. Literally just, do you even feel the clothes on your skin? Do you know if you're hungry or not? Like, have all of your basic needs been met? And I think when I talk to people, they'll reference vacations as being a time where, oh yeah, we had sex 2, 3, 6, 12 times. But what are vacations? They are a step away from all your responsibilities, unless you have kids, in which case those remain. For the most part, you're removing some of the responsibilities. The schedule is wide open, and you're just existing on a beach somewhere, on a mountain. You have enough time for your nervous system to slow down. Really just make sure you get your 3 meals a day. That's it. And so, of course, your desire is a little bit closer to the surface. But on a day-to-day basis, everything's so loud. It's so, so loud. There's so much sensory input. And so when I talk with folks about transitions, it's how do you create that at home? End of your day, morning, doesn't matter what time. Sex also doesn't have to be at night all the time. But where can you afford to add in an hour of just slowing down? And then you can make the decision about what you want to do with being sexually intimate. But don't make that decision in your like tense, everything's firing. Because your body, if you know vaginismus, it's almost like that muscle's just pushing out anything that's trying to get anywhere close. Absolutely not. You need time. You need time for that muscle to relax. You need time to be able to be slow with your partner so you don't feel rushed, because that rushed feeling is going to tense you back up. All of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And it could even, it's such a wild journey when you're going through that and you have this, and like, even when you do all the quote right things, you do all your homework, you're learning to slow down. I just think it's important people understand that in the midst of penetrative sex, you can tighten back up. Again, you may have transitioned properly. It takes time, meaning weeks, months, years, sometimes, for your brain to remember that the practices you put in place, like the homework and the transitioning and the slowing down, is what created safety for you then to receive penetration. So if you tighten back up even in the midst, like, I would assume you can correct me if you would say this differently, but you pause, you come out, and then you reorient if you want to, or you just say, okay, that was enough for today.
It works best when you're practicing these habits in and out of the bedroom. If the only time you're trying to slow down is when it's time for sex, you're not giving your body enough to remember.
Yeah.
So this is a lifestyle habit. It's a lot more beneficial. I think some people feel that rush even more so, though, when they're trying to conceive. And so they think, yeah, I hear you. But the fact of the matter is, I'm only ovulating XYZ amounts of times. And so we do have to have sex on a schedule. I can't just say not tonight because I might miss my window for this month. Understandable. This is where our practice of therapy is going to change your brain patterns more and more over time. Because if I say to you right now, just relax, you're the compute. But in therapy, what we're talking about is how to think about your life as a whole, sex as a whole, your connection as a whole, so that these things actually are playing out at home. So in the moment, it's not just, you know, when you're trying to think and solve all these really big problems, your brain is already outside of your body, if that makes sense. So it's very hard to just say, don't think about that. Because I have to. I want to have the baby. What do you mean don't think about that? Or I have to think about it. It hurts. All of that stuff. We just reorient back to that.
Exactly. I would say that means it's even more important when there is a timeline to practice these things daily as a part of your daily life. Again, not even from a sexual, like, not practicing penetration. That's not what we're saying. We're talking about practicing slowing down, being mindful, visualization, things that help your body then prepare for an event. but it is really hard. There's that added pressure of time or urgency for any reason.
Which is why we need the therapy, because if your partner communicates in a way that reinforces this, then let us work on it in therapy with them present. So you don't have to feel like you're always the bad guy telling stop, 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 stop. And if you're listening to this and you feel like, just check in with your body, I would say, even right now. If you feel tense in your body, even listening to it, like your shoulders are scrunched up or your abdomen's tight, but you realize you haven't breathed in a second, that's the kind of stuff we're talking about. Like, are your buttocks clenched? Are your toes clenched? Is your neck tight? If that's happening just in the background while you're listening to us talk about it, then that means we would need to practice more of that body work in a session so that you can identify it sooner and learn how to train your brain to take back the steering wheel. Slow it back down to relax again and to be so future focused or fear focused that you're missing out on the experience in front of you. That stuff is hard to do. And sometimes there's things that stem back to childhood, to the beginning of your relationship with your partner that are making you go to that place. We got to talk about all.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that happen just on autopilot. We're not really conscious of. Slowing down makes you a little more conscious of it, which also means it kind of brings forth that pain a little bit more.
Yeah.
Sometimes. But that's again why we do this in a safe environment. You should feel safe with your therapist, you know, to be able to, if hard feelings and emotions, which they'll come up, that you know your therapist can hold that with you. That's what we really are looking for, is we want to be able to hold those big emotions without jumping into like, okay, well, now, if you're feeling this and you should do this and you should do that, it's like, no, we're going to slow down even more and actually feel this emotion even more and then transition slowly and naturally back into what it is we need to be doing.
Yeah. When you're looking for therapists, look for, yes, someone who answers your question, but look for someone who you feel like you could get to this embodied place with, someone that you think that you'd be able to exhale with, because that's where you're heading. Right now, you're in the place where you're in research mode, goal mode, do, do, do. But therapy is ideally going to help transition and walk you towards a more calm place, a more disarmed place, more vulnerable place. And that's the energy you're looking for. So always do consultations, I think, if possible, because it helps you just get a little bit of a vibe for your therapist.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it takes time to build a relationship to be totally safe, but that initial consultation is really important. Even just like how fast your therapist talks or how slow, like, might resonate more with you or not. So those things are important.
Yeah, I agree. Go ahead.
Oh, you got
it. I was thinking of my therapist. I liked her because, well, for those of you who know the Enneagram, I'm a 3, wing 4. So I do a lot of thinking and planning and all that stuff. My therapist just seems like she's chilling for the most part. She's just very light energy. She's not goofy or something that feels like it would pull me out of the moment, but she's also not so intellectual or serious that it would pull me into that part of myself. I think, like, with her, it just feels like an exhale a bit. So that's why I chose her between, you know, two therapists that I was interviewing. The other one, I felt like I would be back in my therapist head and thinking and thinking and thinking. So yeah, those are the little energetic things that you're looking for and that you would think about with your partner too.
who are you when you're with your significant other? If you feel like you have to be their other mom, or if they are fragile in a way that doesn't allow you to experience your own body or desire because you're having to take care of their feelings, or you don't trust that they'll, you know, okay, so he gets aroused and today's just not the day, and now he's mad at me, or he shuts me out and gives me silent treatment. Now you're having to caretake. That's just like an extra job you have to do. Of course you're not able to relax. You could have done all your transition work, and even just that moment of him pushing you away, or sometimes it feels like punishing you for not being ready, undoes all of it. So the energy, the felt dynamic between you, your therapist, you, your partner, all of that is relevant in this work.
Very much so. Yeah, a lot of attachment work goes into this as well. Yeah. Is there anything else that comes up for you that feels important to talk about before we end today?
Be kind to yourself. I've worked with folks who have experienced sexual pain for 3 months, 6 months, 6 years, 15 years. You're not alone. This is just the kind of thing that people don't talk about openly. Give yourself the gift of being seen and heard with a therapist, getting that attention. Like you get to have that undivided attention for something that hurts you. You know? That's the one thing I think I would hope that people walk away with.
I love that. Thank you so much for being here today and for sharing your time. I know you have your own podcast. Do you want to share a little bit about the work you do so people can find you?
Definitely. So my podcast is the My Intimacy Therapist Podcast. And I talk about all things intimacy, emotional intimacy, sexual intimacy, and how those two come together. So if you'd like more on this, maybe you don't experience sexual pain, but you do experience some of the relational stuff, definitely come over for a listen. And also do date nights. So if you're in the Atlanta area and you want an intimacy-related date night, I have those events coming on the kind of seasonal frequency. So check it out.
Can you say a little more about that? I'm curious.
Yes. I love being super duper creative with my date nights. The current one that I actually have one coming up this Friday, which whenever you guys listen to it, will be past that, but there will be more. This one is Savoring and Senses. So there's 5 rooms that the couples will rotate through. And within each room, you have a taste room, sight room, sound room, you know, like that. Each room will have varied date cards with different intensities. So you can learn how to communicate about things like, what's a sound that I hear that makes me feel warm and fuzzy about you? Or what's a sound that I hear that lets me know that you are turned on and ready to go? And so it just opens up more creative thought processes into how you talk about your intimate life.
That's amazing.
It's
really cool. Where is this hosted? Where are you, and how it's on your website? People can sign up.
Yep. My website is myintimacytherapist.com as well. And so hop on there, go to the events page, and you can see the upcoming ones, or just stay posted for future ones, because I tend to move around different parts of Atlanta just to make sure it's accessible to everybody.
Cool. Well, I have some people in mind I'll just share with for this week. But yes, this podcast will come out after that. But really cool stuff. Do you have an email list or something like so we can stay up to date, or just kind of go check?
Definitely. No. Get on the email list, because as we just discussed, life is happening. So who has time to go check a website every day? Or head to the website to sign up on the email list. And from there, I'll let you know all the stuff.
Awesome. Very cool. Thanks so much, Shade. I love the work you're doing. And yeah.
Thank you. Cool. You're welcome.
Thanks for listening. If you learned something new today, consider writing it down in your phone notes or journal and make that new neural pathway light up. Better yet, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a DM on Instagram, email me, or leave a voice memo for us to play on the next show. The way you summarize your takeaways can be the perfect little soundbite that someone else might need. And lastly, leaving a review really helps others find this podcast, so please do if you found this episode helpful. And P.S., clicking subscribe ensures you'll be here for the next episode. See you then.